Now to our guest. Very excited to have her on with everything that's going on. A couple of big news stories recently that we have discussed. We'll discuss with Rachel. But Rachel is, she's the Texas Director for Gun Owners of America. She's spearheading their work in the Texas legislature. Very good. She's passing a course about promoting the right to keep and bear arms in legislation, training, and public perception. In 2012, she founded Texas Firearms Freedom, the first organization to champion constitutional carry in Texas, and has seen tremendous progress through her efforts. She loves to teach, and she's excited to be here. We're excited to have her. Rachel Malone, welcome to the Power Hour.
Thank you so much. I am delighted to be here with you today.
Well, one of our great listeners, Marsha, gave us a heads up about you, and she was so impressed with you. She saw you in Texas somewhere, had to have you on. Tell us a little bit about yourself. How in the world did you get involved with Gun Owners of America?
Right. So since about 2012, when I founded Texas Firearms Freedom, I've been working on gun rights. And I've been doing it as a grassroots volunteer, like the vast majority of the people working on gun rights and working on political, on securing our liberties. And I just did it because I cared about gun rights, and how I got into guns is another story in and of itself. But my focus was a little different than I'd seen any other group do, especially here in Texas. It was just focused on teaching people the process so they could get up and get involved. And what I'd always tell everybody is, you are the ones who are most qualified to make your own opinion known to the legislators, not those lobbyists. So I encourage people to get out, attend the committee hearings, be involved in the process in the areas that a lot of people don't even know exist. And so I travel around the state and train people in the process and then bring them with me to the hearings. So it's the people talking. And then GOA, I connected with GOA just through that work. And when they were looking for a Texas director a few months ago, this past summer, they asked me if I would join their team, and I could not be more delighted and more honored to work with them because they're such a fabulous organization.
Oh, well, you said that how you got in guns is another story in and of itself. But, okay, I'm hooked. How did you get involved in guns?
Okay, so in 2009, never seen a gun, never touched a gun. They were very foreign to me and probably never would have given a thought to them. I was a classical musician. I was a professional musician. I taught classical violin and piano. But my brother decided he was going to get his license to carry. And when I heard that, I freaked out. I could not have been more upset because I was convinced that he was going to lose his life because I knew that guns just blow up. And why would he want one in the holster when that happens? And I knew there was no chance anybody's going to ever get attacked. And I knew that even if that did happen, I knew that guns were never tools that could be useful in that kind of situation. So I obviously, you know, quotation marks, knew a lot of things that were completely false because I never studied the issue. I'd never, ever been confronted with it, even though I was raised conservative, very conservative, strongly conservative on all of the other issues, even politically active and involved. But just guns had never entered my life. And so The little bits that I thought I'd heard from the media that were very wrong and convoluted, that's all I knew. And so he challenged me to go look up the facts on the situation, and he promised that if I could prove that what I was saying was true, then he wouldn't get his license and he wouldn't carry a gun. Of course, he knew what I was going to find, so he knew that wasn't a big risk. And I tell you, I scoured everything, every source I could find for any shred of actual fact that I could take back to him to prove what I thought had been true. And I found exactly the opposite. And so I came back to him just a couple weeks later with just one question. How do I get my license to carry? and I started carrying a few months later. So that's how I got into guns.
Arms length, you know, guns, you know, keep those away. That's, cross, you know, hold up like a vampire or something. What is, what do you think was the source of that fear? You mentioned media, what you hear in media, but when you grew up, why was that fear instilled in you? Where did it come from?
Ignorance. And the little bits I thought I knew were from media stories I thought I'd read about, a gun accident where the gun just went off. You know, somebody was cleaning the gun and the gun went off. And I found when I went back later and actually looked up those stories, there was a correction printed later saying, oh, no, actually, it didn't happen that way. Somebody actually loaded it and chambered around and pulled the trigger, and the bullet went exactly where it was aimed. So, you know, it was from inaccurate media.
Well, let's get into a little bit of your work, legislation and empowering people. I think that's one of the things that that's one of the things Marcia mentioned about you is how your story is contagious. You are contagious and it's infectious, your enthusiasm and how you empower people to then speak up for this important right. Why is this so important to you, and how do you empower people? We've got about 4 minutes before the break.
Cool. So, yes, I did meet her at a training, and just as I mentioned on my own before I joined GOA, I was traveling teaching people the process. That is exactly what I'm doing now for GOA, just on a much larger scale, because I have the resources of that organization. But as much as I care about gun rights and our freedoms in that way, I might say I care even more about fighting injustice. And so back in 2011, before I was involved in the issue, there was a bill in Texas. It was licensed open carry. Texas would have been it ended up being the 45th state to get it. So, you know, the majority of other states already had it. And that bill was held up in a committee where one person, any one person on that committee could anonymously tag it to kill it. And so what struck me is it didn't even make it to the floor for a vote. It wasn't like it had a fair chance at it. It just got stuck in this committee. One person could stop it. And the vast injustice of that just riled me up like you cannot imagine, and motivated me to go and tell people about what's happening so they can get involved and hold the legislators accountable and get this stuff moving through.
Why is it that people should be so involved in this issue?
Well, there's a saying that no man's life, liberty, or property are safe when the legislature is in session. I think that's very true. Thankfully, in Texas, the legislature only meets 5 months every other year, but still, it is a fight. You can't just sit by and expect somebody else to do the fight for you. That's what I did in 2011. That's when the bill died in committee, and it made me so mad. I said, you know what? I'm only one person, but I am one person, and this is an injustice I cannot stand to see, and I will get up and fight. But I came back and I realized I can't do it alone. It takes such a crowd of people to actually change political winds, to make it be the grassroots leading things instead of just the lobbyists or just corporate interests. And so that's why it's so important for people to show up when it matters in the process.
You said can't leave the fight to someone else. I thought that was very profound, powerful. I think it applies in a lot of things. How can someone listening, you know, they're behind you, they believe in what you're saying, but then they're throwing their hands up, what do I do? So what do they do?
What do you do? Okay, the very first thing, I will put in the plug for GOA. You can join the alerts list. It's the gunowners.org. And across the nation, GOA is very interested in empowering the grassroots. You know, and not just give us money, let us do the work. It's here's the information, here are the things you can do. And so we'll send out action alerts either for candidates or for legislative items, and start by just writing those emails and making those phone calls. And the next step is going to be to show up. I'm a huge believer in the committee process, and every legislature is similar. They're going to have a committee process. That's when you show up. That's your invitation for anybody across the state to give your record. So show up when it matters during that process. That's literally physically in person. Or at least set up a meeting with your legislator. Say, hi, I'm your constituent. Here are the things that are important to me. Can you commit to doing these things? Those are some practical ways and practical things people can do to help move the issues.
So they go to gunowners.org. They can sign up for these blasts, and they can get some real powerful information and tools, specific, simple things. Here's simple things that you can go do. Go talk to your legislator, and empower yourself and empower them with your will. I think a lot of times, please speak to this, I think a lot of times we assume that the legislators know what we want, the people, but that, you know, they're hearing from so many different people are in their ears. That's not always true, is it?
Right. So several different problems. We either assume that, oh, of course, you know, they're a good guy, they're going to do the right thing. But even the good guys who are inclined to do the right thing, they've got to be hearing from the people who support it. Or we think, you know what, my voice is just one. What good is it going to do? Well, you know what good it's going to do? You got to get out there and do it. But you go get your five friends to call, too. You start building the momentum, and you be the one to do it. So it's both ways. It goes both ways.
Very good. There's the music. There's a break. We got a short break on the other side. There's some big gun stories, you know, as we talked about, probably some of the biggest stories in the world have just recently happened about guns. We'll talk about those with Rachel on the other side and much more. GunOwners.org. Rachel Malone, you're listening to the Power Hour, thepowerhour.com. Despite what Ocasio-Cortez says up in New York, you know, that socialist that just got elected to Congress, despite what she and others have said, Bloomberg, what have you, guns are as apple pie, or as American as apple pie and mom, have been since the beginning. They represent individuality. They represent freedom. They represent sovereignty. I mean, they are Americana, guns, and arming ourselves, militia, freedom. When did it come to the point, Rachel, that started to change, and we started to have a different discussion about this? Rachel Malone from Gun Owners of America, when did this change in this country?
So I think it's been gradual, and you say guns are as American as apple pie, and I think there are so many people who would agree with you and think, oh, of course, nobody's really going to come for our guns. You know, there's always a hype about it, but eventually things will turn around. It'll be fine. And those are the people who don't get up and work for it. And then on the other hand, there are the people who have grown up in the cities like I did, and even if their families were conservative, and so it was just assumed that, oh, of course, they're going to be pro-gun because they, you know, they vote in the right party and they support all the other liberty and conservative principles. They didn't grow up with the mindset of, I have to take care of myself, which you get a lot more of if you live in the country, you're farther from people, you depend on yourself and your neighbors. Like, you're more self-sufficient. Living in a city with all the conveniences, people typically, I'm not going to stereotype people because there are plenty who live in the city who are prepared. But I think that has contributed to the lack of dependence on self, and also a mindset that we as a society, a lot of people have developed the mindset of, we want the cops to take care of us. We want the government to take care of us because it feels better. It feels nicer to think that, you know, that safety can exist. And so people don't want to face the reality that we live in a world where evil does exist and nobody can actually fully protect you from it. And if people would actually wrap their heads around that and realize how vulnerable we actually are to the evil that exists, I think they would be much more receptive to seeing firearms as a necessary tool.
Australia, you know, even Crocodile Dundee, the real Crocodile Dundee that they made that movie about, he refused to give up his guns in Australia, and they shot him to death. And many people in Australia have pleaded with America, please learn from us. You know, they talked about it, and we didn't think it. Kind of exactly what you said, right? We never think, well, it's just talk, it'll never happen. Well, they were telling us, trying to, that that's exactly what occurred in Australia, and then they took all their guns. How alarmed or how gun clutching should we be right now? How, you know what I mean? How paranoid, sitting in a rocking chair clutching our guns, should we be about this issue?
Yeah, so in my training, I go through Ledge Process, and then I have a slide that's a picture of the Berlin Wall, like when it was coming down, and people coming to freedom. And I tell everybody a couple of stories we need to learn from that. So I've been told that some of the people who had been in prison in East Berlin, after the wall came down, they said, you know, if only a few of us, maybe 50, 100, 20, some number, had decided that we weren't just going to wait for this to come down, we were going to go make it happen, instead of just asking could it ever happen, then we could have gone and we could have overpowered a guard post and we could have gotten through and preserved liberty and stood up for freedom. But the price would have been certain death for some of them. Like, some of them absolutely would have been shot to death, but if enough of them had done it, together they could have provided freedom for the rest. So two lessons from that. First of all, people sit and ask, you know, could we really do this? Could we really get constitutional carry or, you know, restore some of our rights? 100% yes, if enough people are willing to get together and just do it and pay the price. But the other lesson is, what's the price now to stand up for our rights? That the price is a little bit of time and a little bit of money. And it feels like such a huge sacrifice to people to, like, take a day off of work and drive to the Capitol and learn to speak. And, you know, they're tired, or they don't feel like it, or it's, you know, they don't like losing the money from a day off work. But
somebody else's fight. Somebody else will do it. Rachel Malone will do it. You don't have to worry about it. Rachel will do it.
Right. But, like, what are they waiting for? Like, if you really care about this stuff, if you really care about your rights, are you waiting until the price is certain death? And if you don't want to wait for that, like, I don't want to wait for that, then now is the time to show up when the fight is in the legislature. And you're not going to be shot to death for showing up and speaking your opinion. And maybe you can actually stop the laws from getting passed so you don't have cops showing up at your door to take your guns or shoot you if you won't give them up.
We're about to come on a break. I was contacted, Daniel Estelin, interviewed him the end of last week, and he contacted me today. And we were kind of talking about this issue in a broader sense. But he was saying, you know, what does winning look like? What does the end goal look like? And there's no image of victory in America's mind. No image of victory. No system has been created to overcome what we're dealing with. And it hit me like a ton. Like, oh, my gosh, he's so right. We don't even picture, what does victory look like for us? And I think it applies here, what you're doing, or what you're saying, and what you're pleading with. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Rachel Malone, gunowners.org, gunowners.org. You're listening to the Power Hour. Stay tuned. Getting back to Rachel. Excuse me. Rachel brought up the story of the Berlin Wall. My uncle, he had a girlfriend, a Jewish girlfriend. And her mother, which is still alive, she's still alive. She's 100-something years old. She's 100-something years old. And she is still alive, lives in New York area. She was in Nazi Austria. She was in Austria while Nazi Germany was ruling. There was the Night of the Broken Glass that occurred in Germany, and the word started getting to her family. She had a fairly large family, you know, aunts, uncles, whatever, children. And the discussion went something like, hey, this is what went on in Germany. They went after the Jews. They broke all the businesses. We got to do something. We got to get out of here. And half the family, this is literally what happened, ladies and gentlemen, half the family said, no, it can never be that bad. It won't come here. Do we have nothing to worry about? Don't worry about it. We'll just go along. There won't be that problem here. It will never happen here. I'm telling you pretty much verbatim of what her family said in that moment. The other half says, no, we're getting out of here. Half the family literally took the same route that the Von Trapps took in The Sound of Music, went over those mountains into Switzerland, I believe, and came to America. The other half stayed, were arrested, put in concentration camps, and all died. Literally. And Alexander Solzhenitsyn, about that same time, talking about the gulags a little earlier, the gulags in Russia, and he wondered, you know, if only a few of us would have stood in the hallways or behind the dark alley, and as the soldiers came by to take people in the middle of the night, that he didn't even say guns. He said, if we would have picked up sticks, if we would have picked up knives, if we would have just done anything, they couldn't have got all of us. They would have stopped. And so I think what Rachel is seeing, being on the front lines, what I think maybe we should be seeing from more of a distance, but still being observant, is you're starting to see indications of, you know, nights of broken glass here and there, and you should be perked up and start to, something inside you says, I need to do something. You know, we started that here on this broadcast, right? What have you done for the Republic this month? What have you done this month for the Republic, or even this week? Anything. Well, something should click inside you, and you should exercise your will and your power in some way here. Rachel, before we move on to some current events, any thoughts about what we just talked about or those stories from World War II?
Yes, 100%. I echo what you said. And see, I fight for personal liberty, and I believe in personal liberty. So I would never tell somebody exactly how they should do activism. You know, I do it my way because I think that's the most valuable way for me to do it. If you have other things you're doing for liberty, God bless you. Please keep doing those things, whatever you think is the most valuable. But please do something. Please don't just assume that everything's okay and somebody else will take care of it. Do whatever's the amount that you can, whatever type you can, but do something to preserve liberty for our posterity.
Well, Gun Owners of America is a great, I love them. NRA, I am very suspicious of and keep at arm's length. Gun Owners of America, we are much more supportive of them, and they've shown themselves to be real gun-owning advocates. So that's something you can do. Let's keep it as simple as that. Rachel gives a lot of tips. There's a lot of tips on the site of things you can do. She has already on this interview. So think about and consider those things. A couple big news stories. Big news story happened about 2 weeks ago now. I thought that the day it happened, it was probably the biggest story in the world, even with everything that's going on. In America, police began to enforce the quote-unquote red flag law out of Maryland, where judges just extrajudiciously decided that people did not need to have their guns anymore and that they were going to physically take them by force. One of the people that they came to their house, his house, Gary Willis, supposedly there was a fight that ensued and a shot came out, but from the gun, and then the other police officer then shot Gary Willis dead. I think that was the biggest story in the world that day of what America has come to. Any response to that situation and what's going on even broader from that law in Maryland, Rachel?
Yes, so we should all be paying attention to that very, very carefully. So the red flag protective orders, or they're also called ERPOs, protective order, they're very dangerous. And I'm very troubled to see a lot of people, even gun owners, saying, well, you know what, maybe there are some people who shouldn't have guns. So red flag protective order, or whatever you want to call it, just is a means for the government to remove guns from some people where there's not even a probable cause of a crime having been committed. It's like the thought police. They say, you know what, we think that this person is going to misuse this right in the future, therefore we're going to strip them of the constitutional right. And in most states, definitely in Texas, there are already things in place where if the person is a domestic abuser, they're a felon, they're mentally incompetent, there are other remedies in place, either removing the person from society there are remedies, okay, for those cases. But this is beyond that. This is where, you know, a neighbor, a friend, a teacher, a family member, you know, a vengeful mother-in-law, whoever, can go and report on somebody and say, you know, for whatever reasons, I think this person is dangerous and shouldn't have guns, and a judge can sign an order, in many cases, without the person even being there, and it's so dangerous.
Very good points. There's the break. On the other side, we'll get, you know, what would you say to somebody who said, well, some people just don't need guns. I just don't want them to have it. How would you answer that on the other side? Rachel Malone, gunowners.org, from Gun Owners of America, Rachel Malone, gunowners.org. We're talking to Rachel Malone, gunowners.org. Gunowners.org is Gun Owners of America, their website. There's many tools, there's many articles. You can keep up with abreast what's going on, what you're not going to hear about on the corporate media for sure. You can make the distinction why you don't hear about this from them, but you're not. People like Gun Owners of America are some of the last bastions of standing for this freedom that we have had from our founding fathers. We're talking to Rachel. We were talking about the red flag laws. Why don't you continue? I know you have some thoughts about that, Rachel.
I do. So, you know, people talk about gun confiscation, and a lot of them say, oh, it'll never happen. It's never going to happen. Well, let's wake up. It's time to wake up, because in Maryland, a couple weeks ago, the cops came to the door of this man and he refused to give up his gun. Like, and a lot of people have the bumper stickers, you know, don't tread on me, come and take it, you know, shall not be infringed means shall not be infringed. And it's easy to say those things and wear the t-shirts, but that's what it looks like when you refuse to give up your guns, when you say, I will not comply. He didn't give up his guns, and he got shot to death. And that should be a wake-up call for all of us. Like, that is what modern-day gun confiscation looks like. And that's why we need to stand up now and keep those laws from getting passed. Or that's the next step. You know, are we going to wave the white flag and give up our guns, or are we going to get shot to death?
If somebody came to you and said, well, Rachel, I mean, let's be real. Let's be reasonable about this. Some people just don't need to have guns.
Yeah, so I'd say, okay, it is not the government's role to make that determination without a probable cause of a crime having been committed. That is far too low of a threshold for removal of a constitutional right. And what we need to face is evil will always exist. We're not going to eradicate evil. If you take, for example, the NICS check system, National Instant Background Check System, about 95% of the flags they put up preventing somebody from buying a gun, that's false positives. And that's the same government we want to trust. Okay, the two examples of red flag. One, they went to the guy's house and they shot him to death. And the other is in California, where they had a red flag protective order system, and it didn't stop a guy from going and shooting at people in a bar. So that is the failure of the government to keep those people from having guns. And the danger is they will then remove them from the people who need them to defend themselves against the crazy people.
Okay, what if someone said, you know, Rachel, this sounds all well and good, and, you know, George Washington was 200 and something years ago. I have no need for guns, and the government, well, they'll never come and take them anyway. I don't even need to worry about this.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, I believe in personal liberty. I'm going to do everything I can to have the discussion and answer people's questions about why I believe this is important. I think I've given some of that today. At the end of the day, personal liberty means you make your own decisions. And if people aren't willing to stand up, they don't think it's worth the fight, that's on them, and that's their decision. I'm going to keep fighting, and I hope there are many other people who will also stand up with me and keep fighting to defend our liberties for our posterity, because that's so important.
How big a force are you dealing with on the other side? I mean, the guns, the lobby, the money, the propaganda, the advertisement, the machine. Seems like an absolute machine is behind this gun control lobby. How big, you're on the front line of this. How big a force are you really dealing with?
Yeah, so the lobby force is huge, and the money, and like the Bloomberg funded groups, like they show up in mass. The Capitol is in Austin here in Texas, and it's liberal, and so it's easier for those people to show up. And a lot of the people who would, you know, believe in gun rights, they're a little farther out. They work hard at jobs all day, and they don't even think to come sometimes, or it's more sacrifice. So yeah, the gun control lobby doesn't speak for all Texans, but there's speaking so strong and so loud, it sometimes drowns out the grassroots and the voice of liberty. And also, okay, to deal with the enemy of fear. They use fear so much, and we've got to stand up to that.
Well, I would, if you want to use fear, if people seem to respond to fear. That's why they keep using it, because they keep us in that, you know, fight or flight, lizard brain,
yeah,
reptile brain,
yeah,
mode.
Well,
okay, if that's
so
what works, here's
healthy,
what I...
Yeah, we should have a healthy fear of, you know what, evil exists. I could, you know, either a tyrannical government or the bad guy. Those threats are real. Let's face those actual threats, and let's face them logically and rationally with a tool that can help us stay safe against us. That would be the thing to do.
Amen. I would be afraid that I would be motivated. I am motivated from a fear that somebody's going to try to take my liberty. That's the fear part that I would react to. Not, you know, it's like the question, if someone broke into your house, would you rather have a cell phone or a gun? Which one would you rather have?
Exactly right. Yeah. When I break it down like that, it makes it easier for people.
Well, we have two or three minutes left. Maybe go over again. I know you talked about this before. Mom and pop sitting at home listening to this, you know, what in the world can I do? How can I get at? How can I ever go to my legislator? This seems so big for me, Rachel. Break it down for them how simple this is and how you make it simple for them.
Yes, yes, you can absolutely do that. So, first of all, go to gunowners.org. You can sign up for alerts. So join the alert system. It's free. You get the emails. And then also, you want to look up and see who your legislators are. And you can use a regular internet search engine. Find out who represents you. You can Google it. Who represents me? And find your congressman, but you can also find your state representative and your state senator or whatever terms they use. And find a phone number. Again, I can't give you the web address, but you can find it through a search engine. Go ahead and call that office and say, I'm a constituent. I would like a meeting with this person. Keep asking until they say yes. Your state representative should have a small enough district to be able to meet with you. And even if you're afraid, even if you feel like, you know, you're not the most educated on it, your opinion matters. You are the one most qualified to give that opinion to your representative. So be bold, be brave, and get out there and have the meeting. You know, speak loud, even if your knees shake, I think is what they say. Go out there and just start having the conversation. They need to be hearing from you. They need to have that accountability. So please do it.
Well, I also think that, you know, when people can look you in the eye, hear your voice, they resonate with the word, there's power in your words. And if you're face-to-face with somebody, you don't even realize how powerful that is. Should they get their friends? Say they won't take a call. The legislator won't take a call. Maybe they get five friends to all call in and say, hey, give Mary Smith a meeting. We want her to meet with you.
Yes, the friends, or literally walk into the district office. There's usually ones close to you in your district. Walk in there and say, you know, talk to the district director. Make friends with the staff, you know. Be friendly with them. Be kind to them. Or start commenting on their Facebook post. I'd really like a meeting with you. I keep calling your staff, and they say you're busy. When can I see you? Or ask the staff, okay, they're busy. When are they going to be speaking at a local club meeting? Okay, I'll go there and talk to them. Get that FaceTime with them. That's very, very important. So keep asking. Keep knocking on doors. They will be somewhere in the community, so find where they are. Be the one who raises your hand and asks a question. Find them afterwards. Tag them on Facebook, you know, with the hard questions. Just keep on asking, and yes, get public about it if you need to, and it should happen.
By the way, this is pretty much exactly what the Founding Fathers did to Britain. They didn't want war. They just wanted, you know, some basic respect, some self-governance. And Britain, they petitioned them at every turn. And all they got back was basically the back of their hand, and Lexington Green occurred. That's really what happened. Samuel Adams, that's what he did, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, petitioning this way. Rachel, it's been an absolute pleasure. Gunowners.org is the website. Rachel Malone, thank you so much, and God bless you in your efforts, Rachel.
Thank you very much. Same to you.